Thanks for listening to another episode of Project Zion. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ.
Welcome to an episode of the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Mangelson, and today we have on newly ordained apostle, Janae Grover, and we are coming at you from Independence, and we're going to discuss Janae's upbringing in the church and the work that she's done for the church, as well as move through to her current assignment. So welcome, Janae. Thank you for coming on and spending your lunch break with us today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So let's just dive right on in. Let's talk about your family history and involvement with Community of Christ.
Well, that is something that I deeply cherish and value. So I grew up in the church and have only known that that faith experience. And I just recently discovered where the beginning point was and how that happened. My great grandpa, and I knew that he was converted to the church in Denmark and moved to the United States to be able to be part of the church and have religious freedom. But I didn't know kind of his whole story. And so my mom came across, as we had both read the Journey of a People series, my mom made those connecting points and came across a story that kind of told about his faith experience and his commitment to the church and his experience of discovering the church. And so that was really, for me, a wonderful heritage to discover and to affirm this this deeper connecting point. So that's my mom's side of the family. My dad's family was converted to the church when he was 11. And so, and he was very committed from a very early age. He was ordained at the age of 14, very committed to being a disciple and a minister at a very young age. And so that is something that my parents, I always knew growing up, I always felt that my folks instilled this deep love of God and the church and their family. And I felt like nothing else mattered. that was what was at our core, was relationship with God and our commitment to the church and what that meant in the life of our family.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that you were involved with youth camps and things like that. And you grew up in Missouri. So did that form and shape you at all, being surrounded by maybe more members of your church than if you were in like a rural congregation? Or
absolutely. Actually, I did grow up in a rural congregation.
Okay.
So I grew up on a farm and there was a little country church that was our congregation, but it had, there were a number of young people. And so all, there were several families that were committed to raising their kids. And when we all kind of graduated and moved on, they decided then to join with the congregation in town. But yeah, it was a small country church, but it was this wonderful sense of community. Hmm. And even for people who were not members of the church, that little church was an important presence in that community. And a lot of community and farm and family life centered around different activities of the church. Like I said, whether people were members or not, there was a connection to that that church community. But then that, so it was in Northwest Missouri. So I grew up in Far West Stake. And so we had lots of then youth activities. There was a large youth group from the stake. And so we had lots of activities in our own congregation, but then also connected with the stake. So lots of camps, lots of youth retreats. Every once a month, the first Monday of every month was skate night for, for the youth. So there was always a regular gathering. And so that those were important parts of growing up in the church as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like it your church experience touched a lot of different aspects of just your growing up. So how was it, being a young woman, a girl at this time? I mean, did you see, what were your, I guess, role models, of women in leadership or of being involved in congregational life? And what was your perception of that?
So that's a really great question, because I feel like I had some very important female spiritual mentors. And whether I realized it at the time, I look back on it now. And both of my grandmas were very committed to the church, and they were both spiritual giants in very different ways. My grandma Collins was a writer, and so she wrote often for the Daily Bread, and I remember thinking that was so cool that my grandma was published in the Daily Bread. And so she did a lot of writing, and she was a very strong woman in terms of being very vocal about her faith and very outward in her expression of her faith and her faith in God and her spiritual life, prayer life, and journaling and all sorts of different things that she did. And my grandma Jensen was this incredibly strong, I don't want to say silent, in terms of making that sound passive. She was this incredibly strong presence, but not because she was incredibly vocal, because she was this spiritual guide that she never would have said about herself. But she had this incredible presence in the community, and she cared for people. And I remember when I learned about how she would anonymously send things to people that she knew were in need. And she constantly went around and visited people. And she was this presence in the community, both in the congregation life, but also in the broader community. And she was really this spiritual anchor around which the congregation and the community centered. And like I said, she would never, ever recognize that about herself. She never said anything in a prayer meeting. She never said anything up front in church. But it was this presence and this sense of caring for people that was very formative for me. And then my mom, I remember when I was in high school, when Section 156 came out and women were allowed to be ordained. And I remember my first thought was, well, of course, that's my mom. Of course, she can be ordained. And immediately then I remember being struck by this realization that it had impact on my life. And originally it was kind of a fear, kind of this sense of, could I ever live up to that because of these women in my life that I revered. And like I said, were such important spiritual guides for me in very different ways. And recognizing this sense of call in my mom, but then this fear that I would not be able to live up to that, I think was my initial reaction. But I remember that almost immediately I had a sense that it had an impact on my life.
And so was your mom called to priesthood then? I mean, was it?
It was. And I can't remember how soon it was, but it was fairly soon after that. It was just a couple years after that world conference that she was ordained. So, and that was really an affirmation. of what ways that she had already been ministering. So it was one of those things that, you know, kind of like, well, of course.
Yeah. Not surprised there. But I think it's interesting that you say you weren't surprised that it seemed natural as a fit for your mom, but then you had to realize, like, oh, wait, that it could impact me as well. So how did that sense of call stir and develop within you over the course of, I don't know, when you were originally ordained or what was that journey like?
So that call for me was probably from that time, and I'm just using rough math here, it was probably a 15-year journey. And I guess as I look back, I have always had a sense of call in that I have always had a very deep and passionate commitment to an awareness of God's presence in my life. And so this journey for me was between the time that I realized that this could have implications in my life. There was always also a journey for me as a seeker. And I say that I never left the church or was, I guess, disenfranchised or anything from the church. It was just this sense that as a young adult, I wanted to know for sure that this wasn't just the faith that was handed to me, but it is what I really believed or where I wanted to live out my life as a disciple. And so that happened in different ways in different parts of my journey. Part of it was living in different places as I pursued my education and then started teaching and different communities, different congregations, different experiences, kind of life circumstances. But it was at a small congregation in Atlanta, Georgia, that I ended up and it was accidentally, I ended up in a pre-baptismal class for one other adult. And I sat in that class because I thought that was the adult class. And this lady that was leading the class said, well, this is a pre-baptismal class. You know, if you want to stay, you're welcome. And I thought, yeah, I do want to stay. And that was a wonderful re-entry point for me, or just this new and deepened appreciation for this faith that had been so important to me, but realizing that it was truly where and how I wanted to serve. And so it wasn't until I was 30. So I was married, but it was before our first child was born. And it was actually a little before that, that I had this, this strange experience. So it happened in a dream. And even as I say this out loud, it feels really weird because if somebody told me this story, I would think, okay, that's weird.
Oh, we like weirdness on the podcast. Yeah. So sacred weirdness.
I'm good with this. Yeah. So I had this dream and I was handed this card, and it was like a greeting card with this beautiful pastoral sense scene. And there was a hand that was handing this card to me. And on the inside of the card, it said, "You are called to the priesthood, Jesus." And I woke up immediately and I sat up in bed and I thought, that was bizarre. That can't be real. But that moment put me in this realization that, wait a minute, there's something happening here. And what does this mean? And so for about a year, I wrestled with that. And am I called? Nobody has said anything to me. I don't know what this means. And after about a year, I had come to this point that of acceptance or just this peace. And I remember I was driving to the temple. I was driving here to rehearse for a service that we were going to be taking part in our congregation. And I remember this sense of peace and saying, God, I will serve however. It doesn't have to be a priesthood call. I will be a minister of music. I will be a presence in my congregation, and I will serve as a teacher, as a music teacher in my profession. And the sense of peace that it didn't have to be anything formal or official, that I felt a sense of call and I was okay to live that out, whatever that meant. And it was a couple of days later that I was approached about a call to serve as priest.
Okay.
So it was an interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting journey.
Yeah. And now look at you.
Who would have known?
So talk to me, I guess, about being a priest. I'm assuming you said that this happened before your children were born.
So I was ordained after my first, so the experience happened before, but my oldest was about a year old when I was ordained. So, so I was really excited about being a priest. In fact, I've always said that that is the priesthood office that I really feel like I've carried through every other priesthood office because I was very passionate about family ministry and small group ministry and what it meant to be, to live out faith in all aspects of life. And so because I was entering into a young family and that had particular meaning to me, but I've always had a passion for that particular ministry. So I've never lost that passion.
Mm-hmm.
Or the sense that there is really a significance about that kind of ministry and the importance of that ministry in the life of the church. So, and I don't remember how long I served as a priest, but I remember when I was called to elder, there was a little bit of grieving because I thought, no, wait a minute, I'm really a priest.
Yeah.
But also this sense of that there were other opportunities for me to serve in different ways. So there's always that kind of that tension of being called forward, but feeling this sense of wanting to live this out in how I'm serving now. So I can think that happened with each successive call as well.
I can relate to that when I got my call to priesthood and priest, and I thought, no, I just need to sit here for a little bit and just be a disciple, figure out this new church,
yeah.
You know. But God has a way with us, doesn't
he? Right. God does.
It works out,
yeah.
I think. I think it works out. So talk to me a little bit about going, I guess, and maybe I'm skipping ahead too far, but going from being a priest or an elder in kind of a congregational setting, to then going to work for the church, or what's the bridge that happened there?
Well, it was interesting because I was a music teacher, so I taught band and orchestra for 13 years. And so my first two kiddos were born while I was still teaching. And that was also the time that I was ordained and living into kind of this new avenue of ministry. And I was really deeply committed to being a teacher as a sense of part of my call.
Mm-hmm.
That in addition to being a teacher, I kind of felt like all of my students were also my kids in this sense of that was part of this idea of family ministry, was also the experiences that we had as kind of a family or a community in the classroom. And it was just for me, it was just this strong desire to this feeling torn between this passion for my career and this desire to be home with my young kiddos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really, and because I felt such a strong call as part of being a teacher, I really grieved when I decided that I wanted to leave teaching to be home with my family. And I didn't regret that decision, but there was this grieving, this separation. But it was also an opportunity as I left teaching to be home, that I also had these opportunities to really invest myself in congregational life in even more expansive ways, to take opportunities for learning, opportunities for classes that were offered in the evenings. So I had more time to start exploring what it meant to be a minister, to really, like I said, really invest in congregational life and ministry. And also our third kiddo was born after I decided to stay home. So I was home for, I stayed home for about 7 years. And like I said, there was kind of this commitment to to ministry and to my priesthood calling in a different way, because it was a redirection from my role as a teacher to then investing in different opportunities, small group ministry and congregational life. And so the kind of the bridge to coming to work for the church happened. A friend approached me about the Daily Prayer for Peace coordinator position, which was a part-time position, was open. And I remember saying, oh, that would be perfect. I would love to do that, but in a year, you know, after my youngest goes to kindergarten, then I can do that. And she kept coming back and saying, this is still open. You need to do this. And finally, I think she may have even filled out the application for me and walked it in. But that was my entry point into working for the church. But also, I loved that experience. So I was only in that role of Prayer for Peace coordinator for about a year and a half. But it opened up this broader sense of a global community, number one, because what I loved was learning about the countries, learning about the challenges and the opportunities of different countries around the world, and praying for people in different countries in an intentional way. And my kids loved it. We would talk about the countries. We would find them on a map. They loved doing that and hearing about what is the country we're praying for today? And so it became this family engagement in this connection to the church. And also expanding, my sense of commitment to peace and justice issues. So, you know, it was a part-time role with church, but it really opened up my perspective of what it meant to belong to a global community, what it meant for Community of Christ to be a global community, what it meant to be invested intentionally in the lives of people in countries that I may never visit or travel to, but to have this awareness, and then what does it mean? So it was really an impactful, formational experience for me. And then that led to the Disciple Formation Ministries position that I, that I transitioned into, which all of that kind of came with me. And then that was a really a connecting point for me with my education background and, this passion for learning and teaching. And so connecting that to then also my passion and commitment to this community and to this sense of global peace and justice. And so that was where I was then called as a high priest. And I remember that the thing that really struck me the most was a friend of mine. We had this conversation before I was called as a high priest, but we talked about how she said, you're a bridge builder. She said, you're this connecting point between all these different things. And I thought, because my grandpa Collins had been an iron worker, had been a bridge builder. Oh. So I remember when she said that, I thought, oh, wow, I'm a bridge builder, just like my grandpa, but in a different way. But when I was called to the office of high priest, that is what resonated with me, is that building bridges or connecting people. So whether it's learning experiences or connecting different age groups, whether that's worship or formational experiences or congregational life, or connecting people to this idea of what it means to be a part of a global family. So that for me was a real life-giving aspect of high priest ministry. I didn't see myself as this administrator, you know, or this, I really connected with that aspect of building bridges for people. And that was that learning, you know, kind of making connections in a learning aspect. So
that's awesome. So let's talk about disciple formation. That's something that I'm not necessarily familiar with, like the process of what that, department of the church, if you will, does. But so I'm assuming it's creating priesthood manuals, resources, things like that, which is a huge task. So can you speak to that a little bit? I mean, did you have a committee, a team?
So when I started, we were in a space where there had been, historically in the church, there had been departments for Christian education. And several years before I started in the role, that department was no longer. That was part of a restructuring and downsizing in the church. So there was not a department that was creating curriculum resources. But we were also in a space of not discovering, but just this awareness and really wanting to flesh out what disciple formation meant beyond just curriculum. Mm. So that disciple formation was so much more holistic than just a resource, you know, for teaching. And so that really was a wonderful aspect, I think, of development for the church to really kind of live into that, what that meant in terms of holistic disciple formation. So it's not just what you do in Sunday school or just what you do in a worship experience, but rather what it meant for a whole life discipleship. So I think that part of the journey with the church was an opportunity to really kind of give space to exploring what that meant. But there was also, as a mom, as a teacher, there was always, for me, this desire to kind of fill that void for teaching materials. Mm-hmm. I heard that voice from the church, and I heard that in my own sense of teaching Sunday school classes and, you know, wanting to have resources that helped connect those dots for people. And so as we started then to move into, with a very small team, but we did have a team, and started then to develop resources, educational resources, so lessons for children, youth, and adults. So it's not a fully graded curriculum, which was something that we've had in the past, but it's been moving into providing those resources, but also part of also developing the priesthood courses for ordination and for education for priesthood members. So that's all kind of under this big umbrella. Yeah.
Well, and it's all happening when the church is going through their own theological journey and right. identity journey and, right. and all that stuff. So that this is fascinating.
So we actually, and then part of recent downsizing, then so there's no longer a team, but we've gone to a model of using field writers, which I think I'm very excited about. So I mourn the loss of, you know, I mourn the loss that we've experienced. But I'm choosing to look at this as an avenue for further development, because as we train writers, as we bring a variety of voices into the development of resources, we bring a richness of voice and experience and giftedness. And when you have an opportunity to train writers, then that just, you know, that filters out in the life of the church. So it's a new model, and it's just beginning, but I'm very hopeful for what, for how it will be lived out. But it's really connecting for me right now. We began with this approach of connecting the identity of community of Christ with the biblical, narrative. In that we are currently exploring the gospel texts and our worship resources. And so making those connecting points of our particular identity and history and beliefs, and theology, how those connect with that gospel narrative. So that's been a very exciting process to make those connecting points, to bring those things together.
Yeah. I know that in Salt Lake we've used, the newer church materials for Sunday school. And it's been really eye-opening. Our congregation in Salt Lake is primarily brand new members. Yeah. And so being able to see the Bible through a new lens and through the lens of Community of Christ has been really important for us. So I thank you. Let's move in to talk about your role as apostle a little bit. So I want to hear about your call and what that was like. I mean, your reaction, just the story, the journey, sitting with that, that question and stepping into that role. How was that?
Wow. It's been quite a journey. So I guess I have to first go back to, so this has all been kind of a whirlwind. So I started as the daily prayer for peace coordinator as a part-time employee of the church in 2011.
Oh, wow. That is.
So in this space of 5 years, a lot has
come on, Lord.
And yet I look back and I realize how it's been a lifetime journey. Mm. So it's not just about the 5 years that I've worked for the church, but really, a lifetime of formation. And I really value, my experience as a teacher. I have a degree in secondary administration, for principal and superintendency that I never used in the public school setting, but that training, that perspective has been a helpful development now in the role I serve in as an administrator for the church, as a general officer. So there's experiences that have really been formational in ways that I didn't anticipate that they would be. But I look back and it's not just a 5-year journey, but really a whole life journey. But, when the church went through, a couple years ago, so in the last couple years, we've been through two downsizing. So the first one, I remember kind of struggling with, what does this mean for me? You know, I really love what I'm doing, my work for the church, but what does this mean for me? And so I had come to this this place of peace that, and I really had kind of wrestled. God, just tell me, am I supposed to be staying here? Am I supposed to look for teaching jobs? You know, and what am I supposed to do? And this moment of clarity a couple years ago was just a sense of that I was going to be passionately engaged in the mission of Jesus Christ, no matter where I was officially working. Mm-hmm. So whether I worked for the church or whether I was at home or whether I went back to teaching, that this passion and this sense of call was there, whatever that meant. So I had a sense of peace about whatever decisions had to be made, that I was going to be okay with that, that I would feel a sense of loss, but I was going to be okay with it. And then, you know, that kind of came up again as we went through another round of downsizing, and I started going through a new struggle. And it wasn't that I was not at peace with whether or not I would have a job with the church, but I really started feeling this sense that there was something else. And I would journal and pray every day and kind of wrestle with what this meant. And I had a sense that it was a calling, and I couldn't figure out what that was because I couldn't make sense of that in my life at that time. And it was because of my family, my young family. Mm-hmm. But also I had this experience of submission that I was open. I was open to whatever this meant. So President Veazey stopped by my office one day and asked if I had a moment. I also want to back up and say, just be careful if you pray the mission prayer every day. That you never know where that spirit is going to lead. So just to put that out there.
Noted. That's great.
But when he presented the call, there was immediately this sense of affirmation. And yet also I knew that it was going to be a challenge. And so, I did share it with my husband right away. And so we really wrestled and discerned together, for a while. And I got to a point where I was almost grieving because, at one point I felt like I was being asked to choose between the church that I loved and my family that was still at home. And I thought, I can't do that. And how could God ask me to do that? And then there was this, in kind of this opening, pouring out my heart in lament. And President BC had also framed the call in that a no was okay if now is not the time. And I really appreciated that, that there was a sense that there was this call, but does this timing make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so in this moment of where I was in this moment of kind of lament was also this awareness that this is not a choice. I'm not being asked to choose between the church and my family, that this was something for us to journey with together. And so that was kind of this aha moment that this isn't for me to discern and choose, that this is part of us as a family unit, that if we can be in this together and have this sense that it's okay, then I can be okay with that. And so we brought the kids in to the discussion and the process and the journey together, which was a really an amazing affirmation.
And so how old are your children?
So my kids are, Zach is 17. He's a junior in high school. Dylan is a freshman. He's 14. And Caitlin is in sixth grade and she's 11.
Okay.
So we're in the midst of
busyness.
And there's also a sense of, and you know, when my husband Kevin and I talked about it, we really kind of tumbled to it really depended on what my field assignment would be. Hmm. That if it involved regular travel away from home, that just wasn't going to be possible. So before I had kind of come to a final decision, President Vesey shared with me what they were thinking about the central field being the field where I would serve. And so, number one, that's all home. I've lived in all the mission centers at different times. I've grown up in this area, but also that it's, while it's a large population of the church, it's a small geographical area. So I'm able to be present in the field and I'm home in the evenings, you know, yeah. And I'm able to even to, you know, to do a workshop, but still get to the kids' activities. So, so there has also been incredible support for me to put my family first, to make sure that I don't let my schedule just completely wipe out, you know, the importance of being present for my family. So.
Yeah, that's an important balance.
Yeah. So that was really an incredible, I really feel, that there was a real, you know, I wanted to make sure that the kids didn't just say, yes, we're on board just because they felt like. And so we had lots of time together as a family, but also time with each one of them individually. And what does this really mean? And so that it has really been an incredible experience for our family. And I feel very fortunate that I am propped up by an incredible network.
Mm-hmm.
So my extended family is all in the area, all active in the church, all supportive of this new responsibility. And my immediate family has been really amazing.
Yeah. But, well, and what a good example for your daughter. I just keep coming back to your sixth grade daughter, you know, and seeing her mom just step into this role and position, and it's just normal for her, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's really special. So I guess I'm curious a little bit about your ministry in this area. I know that, like you said, there's a large membership of the church, a large population, but there's also quite a bit of diversity here as well. So how has that been? I mean, how... I know that there are some congregations that are less accepting of women in the priesthood, or I've talked to some people that, you know, have found challenging moments in their ministry because of being a woman. Have you come across that, or how do you navigate that as an apostle, or even before you were an apostle?
Yeah, so I have I have never experienced that personally.
Nice. I like hearing that.
Now, I have to frame that also with I haven't been invited to some congregations. So there's that.
There is that.
But I have not ever had that sense of feeling lesser than as a minister, or feeling that I wasn't supported. But again, you know, it's all kind of where I've had contact. I have had some people have commented, and some of them have come, somebody made a comment to my dad, after I spoke one time and said, well, if anybody doesn't believe that women should be in the priesthood, then they haven't heard, they haven't heard what a woman has to say.
So your husband is like this token.
I feel like I have come into this role in, we're not in a perfect place because there are congregations that are still struggling. There are congregations that have a Community of Christ sign out front, but are still wrestling with ordaining women. So I realize that that's a reality. But it's not a pervasive reality. And so I've kind of grown up in this space of where it has been accepted. So I have never felt like that my ministry was kind of held at a different, in a different way than anyone else's. So I feel fortunate in that regard. And like I said, nobody has come out and said, but again, you know, not every congregation has been, inviting. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see. There's, you know, it's early in this journey in terms of my role in as apostle in this field. So there still is, you know, some journeying to do together, shall we say?
Well, I really appreciate hearing that. I think so often we're sometimes we can be eager and anxious to maybe share our negative experiences, and so whenever I hear, which can be have its place in time, but I do appreciate hearing of women that have just not, who recognize that it exists, but have, who haven't personally come across that. That brings me a lot of comfort. So I guess I'd like to hear your thoughts on your actual ordination and World Conference and being kind of front and center in front of the church at that experience. What was that like?
Oh, wow. So hard to describe because on the one hand, it was so surreal, just surreal. Because, so here's a little interesting background because it actually kind of found its way into the prayer for my ordination. I was at an event that my parents were at and they were sitting with, at a table with some good friends of theirs that are also in this field. So at that time I was an apostle designate. I had not been ordained. And so I was walking over to say hi to my folks and their friends. And my dad said, oh, we need to stand up. Here comes our apostle. Oh. And my mom said, oh, it's just Janae. So there's this moment of my mom keeping it real, you know?
Yeah. Let's keep that one grounded.
However, and that's, I guess, part of the surrealness because I don't feel like anybody other than just Janae, just who I am. And so I don't feel any more special or any more important. it's just who I am and I'm going to be who I am. And that's also part of the calling. And that was an important affirmation to be told that it's not a generic call. You are called to bring your voice to the Council of 12 at this time in the life of the church. And so that, I think that's really important for me to realize that, I'm not called to be somebody else. I'm called to be who I am. And I guess so that the whole, all the events of the week, you know, took on a whole different meaning, as the events unfolded, and then the night of my ordination, I guess it was on the drive to the temple that it hit, that suddenly the weight became real.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a physical sense of that weight. And just to the point that I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to keep myself together and just even get through this? But it was such a special and intimate service in the temple because of the fact that there were people seated up behind and surrounded. There was just this intimate sense of who we are together. And the service was beautiful. And the prayer that was offered for my ordination, I thought was so unique. And yet everything seemed to really sum up what I was feeling. That, you know, the sense of the weight of it, but yet I'm just Janae. Mm-hmm. And I'm not expected to give more than I can. And that this is not about stretching me thinner. I remember those words, but about, I guess, magnifying whatever it is I have to offer in this role. So it was really a powerful experience, to hear the words that, that felt so inspired and so personal that Art shared. And just to be in that experience of community and really, like I said, this sense of who we are together.
Mm-hmm.
That I have a particular responsibility in this, but it's just me. And it's just me offering who I am in whatever way that can be a part of what we're all doing together.
I bet that's a huge comfort.
Yeah.
To come to that realization that you don't have to reinvent yourself. You can just show up at the table as Janae and that's enough.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that. It was a beautiful service. We were able to attend. We got childcare for our kids so we could really be present in the moment and be there. And it was my favorite part of World Conference. So
yeah. And the, I believe his name is Andy. Is that the soloist?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
His ministry, all of the ministry, but also, something that was really, special for me is in the string quartet were two of my former students.
Oh, that's
and
so special.
So that's to have kind of that connection
and
it was for me kind of this, like I said, this affirmation of this journey that was so much more than just the journey of this calling or the 5 years that I've been
or a priesthood office
or
anything.
Just this expanded life journey, all bringing it to this time.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. So how was it, I guess, to see World Conference then from the other side? If there is, I mean, does that make sense? Like to see it from, you know, a more administrative side, you're looking at everybody. I assume that you had attended world conferences before. Mm-hmm. But what was that experience like?
Wow. So, anytime you kind of have, that sense of kind of the bigger picture, it gives you a different appreciation, a different understanding. But just the physical act of changing where I was sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me didn't feel like a position of power. It was a new perspective.
Mm.
So it was looking out and seeing, the body. And that was really an amazing experience. Like I said, it wasn't kind of this change in power or position. It was a change in perspective. And also, just this new connection to people that were part of the field in which I would be serving.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this immediate immersion kind of in new relationships and a broadened sense of community, but also, what we were going to be about together. And my favorite, probably second to the ordination service, was the hymnal service.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an opportunity to be on the stage. But again, it was what I loved about it was this perspective of seeing the body. And so particularly as these waves of emotion that would move through and being able to see that was just incredible and such an affirmation of the presence of the Spirit amongst us. And particularly when we sang, "The Spirit of God like a fire is burning," mm-hmm. and then sang "For Everyone Born." Mm-hmm. And it's like this anthem of our history and this anthem that was pulling, that's calling us forward. And to see that, the expressions of the people and to see how meaningful those two particular songs are to the body in different ways. But like I said, it was just an incredible shift in perspective and that I really appreciated. So, I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it did. That was good.
So, you know, there's obviously the accepting of a new responsibility. So then that comes with, a burden, but I also see the blessing in that. And it was that immediate connection to people in a new way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So on the Council of 12, what are your specific duties? So you're over the central mission, mission field. What does that actually look like? What are your on the ground tasks that you participate in?
So I work closely with Mission Center presidents. And so we're moving into a new space with bivocational and team leadership models. So this is kind of a new space that we're kind of working through together. Mm-hmm. So I've been meeting with Mission Center presidents and teams regularly and being in conversation and doing some visioning work and kind of what does this all mean. Part of it has been a learning experience for me. So it's learning the field, mm-hmm. learning who mm-hmm. the people are, learning the challenges that face, you know, each particular mission center, learning the congregations. So there's a lot of, learning on my part. But it's really just responding to, what is this call for us for mission in this particular area? You know, what does it mean for us? And it's a very unique, field. And so that's just part of the journey. So it's primarily, engaging with Mission Center leaders, but I've also had, so we had a temple event, a priesthood gathering for the whole field, the whole mission field. And so that was a wonderful experience. And because we're a small geographical field, we are able to gather. Mm-hmm. And we happen to be here close to the temple. So we're able to gather at the temple, which is really, really special. So, so I've been engaging with priesthood. I've been in congregations as much as I'm able, but I do save. It's really important for me to go to our home congregation as a family. Mm. So I don't schedule every Sunday to speak. And even if I did every Sunday, it would take 3 years before I could be in every congregation. And I feel so that's just not, it's not possible to get to everybody. But I do love being as present and engaged as possible. Understanding that I have to set boundaries and that's hard for me. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the first year would be the hardest, as we live in a new rhythm as a family and kind of figuring out where I need to set stronger boundaries and how it works together. So we've maintained a really good rhythm and, you know, we're together throughout the week. It's really, you know, mostly weekend responsibilities, but I'm at home mm-hmm. every night. I'm able to be home at night. So that really makes a difference.
Yeah. Makes a
I'm huge not gone
difference.
For the whole weekend, every weekend. Mm-hmm. But I can still be present in my field. So really that's really, it's really been trying to hear as many voices, to be present as much as possible and to kind of get a finger on the pulse, but also to start, visioning forward. So
do you think that your children have like a full grasp of the magnitude or I guess scope of what your responsibilities are? I'm just so fascinated with the fact that you have a daughter that's, you know, right on the brink of becoming a woman and, and all that stuff and just what this will mean for her. I just think that she'll look back on this experience and I think it'll mean something. So do you think that she has any idea of,
you know,
of that?
I think so, but I don't know. Because it's so, you know, they keep me grounded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kids do that.
So, you know, I'm their apostle, but I'm their mom.
Yeah.
And so I jokingly said to my oldest son, who leaned over and said a joke to me one time at an event, and I said, "Is that any way to talk to your apostle?" And he said, "Well, you're mom. You're just my mom." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm just your mom."
But you can pull that card on him if it's convenient.
It's not very effective, but, you know, I am just mom. And yet, they do have, Caitlin has said to me how, in fact, this was the most touching, when I was talking with her, just the two of us before I had accepted the call. And she said, "Mom, the church needs you."
Mm.
And she didn't say that in a sense of, that you're leaving me,
mm-hmm.
but I'm okay because the church needs, it wasn't that. It was this incredibly wise moment of her to just be very grown up and to kind of recognize that this was important. So she grasped kind of the magnitude of the decision.
Yeah.
And what it meant. So that was, and my oldest son, has always been a real cheerleader. And so he immediately, "Well, yeah, you need to do this. This is important, Mom." My middle son is the one that processes things differently. And so, you know, he kind of needed to sit with it a while, as did my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Needed to kind of rest with it a while. But, so I really feel that they do grasp the importance. But like I said, you know, at home, it's just real life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's all the realness of family life. And
yeah.
So, you know, that's important. It's important that they are my grounding source, but also my source of strength. So
that's beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you for this. So going forward, I'm just curious about what would your charge for the church be, or what's your hope for the future, or what would you like to see us come together and accomplish?
Oh, wow. That is a great question. I guess I answer that with, I want the church that is in my heart to be the church that the world sees and knows. And I want us to live into that. And I don't say that in any sense that I feel like I've arrived at what that is, that it's a journey for me to continue to live into what it means to be community of Christ in the world. But I am relentlessly hopeful. And so even with the challenges that surround us in the world, even the challenges that surround us as a church, I am filled with a sense of hope that we are faithful to this journey that we are on. And it has been an amazing journey of transformation at many different times along the way. And I think that we are just stepping into a new unfolding of what it means. And I always say that I'm a traditionalist at heart. So I love the Sunday morning, Wednesday night,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of the aspects of congregational life that is kind of this idea of a traditional congregational life. But I'm also, and I don't think that we are being called to leave that behind, but I also know that we are stepping into new possibilities of what it looks like to be the church in the world. And I want us to not be such a well-kept secret. But like I want us to be that voice of hope, that voice of justice, that voice of calling in a world that needs that.
I want that too. Well, thank you. Thank you. It's been a real treat.
Thank you, Brittany.
I'm really glad that we got to do this.
The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.